I'm so proud of us for remembering today.
I think that that one has won out. I feel like
it is. It's, I mean, it's the correct vibe for us. I think
it is.
I think the other one,
these psychedelics.
Yeah. Like the other one is great, but it's just, we're just not that bubbly.
Nope. Nope. We're not.
Why?
Hey guys, welcome to Theology on the Rocks, where it's the end of the semester. Oh, Christy is muted because Penny is feeling the angst, and
Penny is mad.
Penny's been mad for a minute.
It's because we have a neighbor.
Oh,
and she wants to be a hermit. You know, like she wants to live in the woods in a glam house. She doesn't want to touch dirt, mind you. She just doesn't want there to be any humans within miles of us.
Except for you.
Except for me. You can come visit. She likes you.
She likes me.
But
thank God.
She wants there to be my cousin to go, she's in a very, very fancy neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And so to get in the gate, they have a security person and you have to be on the list and you have to show them your ID. And I feel like this is what Penny wants.
But her list would be like,
her list would be
four people. Maybe.
She'd be like, only these few. And I would be like, Penny, more people can come. She'd be like, no.
Stuart is sort of allowed. She sort of forgets he's there.
Yeah. He's the right kind of, like, he doesn't overwhelm her with his.
He's the Homer Simpson, we've always said, that goes back into the head. And so she will eventually forget he's there until he moves. Yeah.
And
until
then he stands like,
up. Oh. And then she's like, oh gosh.
She's like, oh, but she doesn't find him to be a problem.
I think her biggest problem is sensory overload.
Yes.
Or even sensory underload, I don't think.
Sensory, just any sensories. Yeah, I agree. I sometimes think that she has doggy autism because she has very specific sense needs. Like and none of this is in any way backed by medical science. This is just my own
observation. Wait, what?
I know.
Wait, start over. You mean your doggy autism diagnosis
is not
in the American Kennel Association?
There is a thing called dog autism, but I've looked it up because I was like, does she really have this? And it is not the things that I'm going to explain to you. So
okay. So you're flying in the face of science right now. Yep. You don't even care.
Yep. That's exactly
it. Welcome to Theology on the Rocks, guys. Where we fly in the face of science.
We don't care about your science. She doesn't like it when if grass or like weed stickers, not like Disney stickers like last.
We worked through that last week.
Yeah. If those get on her, she immediately will stop walking and sit down or roll over, depending. And she tries to get it off herself, but like I have to almost always pick it off before she'll move again. If her food is even a little bit wet, she wants nothing to do with it. There's just a lot. And if you hit the couch, the brush crumbs off, she is gonna kill you. She is like, absolutely not. We don't do those things. So she has really very specific things.
I mean, imagining her, even if it was for the 5 seconds that she was a stray.
I know.
How overwhelming that 5 seconds have been.
It would have been, I mean, she would have just absolutely lost her mind. It's no wonder they thought she was feral. She was outside for more than 5 seconds.
Is selectively feral.
Yeah. When she's mad, she does seem a bit feral.
Yeah. So,
no. Anyway, we're both drinking gin, which was your idea. I've converted you, I think.
Maybe in the summer.
It's perfect in the summer.
Here is my issue with gin and tonic.
Okay.
Buckle up, guys.
I'm excited.
Are you excited that Leah has an issue with something? Today, Leah has an issue with many things. This is one of them. Is I like it. I feel like I feel about gin and tonic the way you feel about white wine.
Okay.
Which is that I think this is how you feel about white wine. Is that it's just kind of boring comparatively.
Oh, I think that white wine is too sweet.
Oh, I don't think that about gin and tonic. I just think it, like, if you're like, because I said gin and tonic and then Stuart literally goes, we have this. We also have Coke. If you want a ramen Coke, I immediately regretted everything. Like, all I wanted was a ramen Coke. And then, but it was too late. It had, it had been done. So I think it's just that it offered like a, even maybe like 4 to 5 drinks that I would not choose it.
I understand that. I think that gin is not, I don't think it's boring. I think this is why I'm kind of snobby about what kind of gin I drink, is that I want to be able to taste it. You know, I want there to be a taste.
Yes.
But I will say that one of the things I like about it is that it's not a heavy taste.
It's true.
Which is the opposite of how I usually drink things, because like I want my wine to be the most taste that you can have.
Yeah. I think that's why that I thought you felt this way about the white wine.
Yeah. No, it's, I think white wine is just too sweet.
Yeah.
That's why. And I have had some white wines that were fine that I didn't hate, but it's like I also haven't taken the time to figure out like the ones that I
can't. You're not all Pinot Grigio.
I just like, I can't. And it's not even like
Savvy Pinot Grigio. Savvy B is like
really specific before I'm like,
Savvy Blanc is tart, and then you can get some buttery Chardonnay. They're not, I know. I
know.
I'm an ABC girl.
Yeah.
If you do have white wine drinkers, a lot of times it's anything but Chardonnay. Usually.
Anyway, but I like the way that gin and tonics are just refreshing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think I mostly drink them in the summer, though I do have some spiced gin that I drink in winter, because it's got spices.
Yeah.
So it's,
I think,
what just happened?
This is the problem with having my computer attached to my phone, because they're both in the cloud. That means when Christy and I both got a text just now.
We did.
But the difference is that mine just flashes across the screen as opposed to Christy's that doesn't. So yeah, no, I think, G&T for summer, we're good to go. White wine for summer, because it's real hot here now. We're like in the night. We're bordering
on the 90s. We're fully into the misery here.
Yeah, the misery. Spring is sprung.
It's done. But we also
2 weeks, I think.
Yesterday, I was cleaning out my fridge, and I realized that I had ginger beer, which I don't really like ginger beer. Nope. So I was like, why do I have this? But I was like, well, I've got to finish it. And so I looked up cocktails that are not Moscow Mules, because I don't like those. But
this is the front of the Tyrion in you that's coming out that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've got to use it.
I have to use it. But there was one, it's called a Foghorn, and it's ginger beer and Old Tom gin. And I have a bottle of Old Tom that I also don't drink very often. And I was like, this is two birds, one stone. Like, I can drink the ginger beer and the Old Tom. And it's actually, I'm enjoying it. It's actually quite good, which is an interesting.
Ginger is not my favorite.
No, but the Old Tom really covers up the ginger.
Well, that's good.
Because the old Tom I have is a citrus.
Ginger is really big in the cider scene. So you get a lot of like ginger, because apparently people think we need all of this together. And I am not it feels like it's not something like broccoli where I'll just like take it from my mouth and throw it directly back in your face. But like, it certainly is something that is overpowering.
Yeah.
I feel like it's like aniseed. If you've ever had anything with like aniseed in it, it's licorice, basically, that flavor.
Okay.
Like ginger just feels overwhelmingly like that's all I'm tasting.
Yeah, same. I mostly, and that's why I don't like Moscow Mules, is because it's vodka, so all you taste is the ginger, and I'm like, this is terrible. The one that you make with the ginger beer and whiskey is slightly better because the whiskey helps.
What's that called?
I don't know.
Christy.
Yeah, I don't know.
All of the theologians that fill our brains have made it so nothing
there's
else.
Just, there's just not room for everything, you know?
Nothing else can live there.
I've been brushing up on Shia Islam, and that feels like it's a good chunk right now. So.
Whenever you teach world religions as a predominantly Christian scholar, the issues are not what you might think. Like, we don't just walk into a classroom and start shouting, "Praise be the Lord."
No,
it's that
it's more
you,
like
you do have to learn.
Yeah, and like, because the students are going to ask you the same, off the wall weird questions with every religion. So you can't just learn enough. You have to learn also some weird things.
Yeah,
because you have to be able to answer. And there's already a pretty significantly noticeable difference in how much I know about Christianity versus every other religion. So I try at least to like.
Good. The good thing is that if you are a religious studies scholar, at least you have the setup for the other religions. Like, it's not saying they're similar, but you kind of know, like, there's probably going to be a sacred text. There might be a main character energy, as the kids say.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, that's what I, because I have it structured so that we go through the creation stories for all of them to work through like basic beliefs and then a history and then significant developments, which I do for all of them, like regardless. And I feel like I've gotten to the point where I feel very comfortable most of the time. But given current world events, I felt like I needed to be better with specifically Shia, because we usually spend more time on Sunni. But I was like, I need to brush up on this. So I've been doing a lot of that.
Yeah, I haven't taught world religion since 2023, maybe. Just feels weird to say that number out loud, because what in the world?
How is that not like this year? Bless you.
Thank you. I don't know. But I feel like the world, and even in these 3 years, has shifted so dramatic. Because all we were talking about back then was, I mean, we were talking about politics for sure, but like COVID was just still so like
the thing everybody was talking about. The
thing that everyone was talking about. And like, so it's we've shifted a little bit from there.
Yeah.
A lot of it. Yeah. So you have a Casa Bonita shirt, and it would be very terrible of me to not make a comment.
Even though
you didn't invite me.
Leah, you and Stuart, we're going to go.
She has said this, listeners, no less than 4,000
times. I just need you and Stuart to come to Colorado. Like, you know,
why does Stuart have to come? Why can't I just come?
I need Stuart's British brain to explode in front of me, because it, I mean, yours will also, but his even more so.
I mean,
he'll be like, what is happening?
Also, right, you know, if Stuart's British brain explodes, it's gonna be a whimper. You're not gonna,
imagine that he's gonna go,
fluttering of the eyelashes.
No, he's gonna freeze. He's just gonna be like, no, I'll just take you too. It's fine. If you were to say to me right now, Christy, I am going to go to Colorado next weekend, I would be like, done. I'm coming, and we're going to get.
Well, Christy, as luck would have it, he says with all the sarcasm in the world, I am going to be in Colorado.
You literally name the dates. November.
You know the dates.
I do know the date. We're going to go. We're going to make. No, we're going to do it. It's going to be amazing. This was one of my top. So I used to go to Casa Bonita a lot in the what we call the before times, which is before Matt and Trey renovated everything.
I thought COVID.
Nope. No, it was similar. It was similar because it was right in COVID when, So essentially what happened is this. This is a brief, I will make it brief, but it's a brief history of Casa Bonita. Casa Bonita was very, very popular, and it was a thing. Like, you had to wait an hour to get through the cafeteria-style line to get your food and to get sat, no matter when you went, right? And it was like that for a really long time. And then the last, like, 5 years or so, right before COVID, so, like, 2015 to 2020, it was really going downhill. And it got to the point where you were, like, one of three parties in the whole place, and it was very weird. And then it got named a historical landmark. And
throwing some fake Mexican restaurants into the mix here.
Greatest place in the world. But it got named a historical landmark, and then right after that happened, it went bankrupt and it shut down. And then, and that was during COVID. That was in 2020. Like, COVID hit, it went bankrupt. It did not reopen. And then Matt and Trey from South Park purchased it. There's a little museum that I'll take you to that's inside of Casa Bonita now that shows you what they did, but they completely gutted the inside because there were so many health code violations. So it's clean now, which is awesome.
A lot of water to be around that food.
It's very humid inside.
It looks like you're in a rainforest.
You kind of smell the chlorine immediately. Yeah. Which is fine. So anyway, so I've been a lot and I've had some really top tier nights at Casa, but this was really up there because I think we were all just so excited. I mean, we've all grown up going there and we were just so excited to see the like new Casa Bonita stuff. So we did everything. We did the puppet show. We did the magic show. We got our faces painted. We obviously did Black Bart's Cave. Like we were living it up.
If you watch, we'll put up the South Park clip if we can.
We'll at least link it.
To the South Park clip. Cartman, who goes through Casa Bonita in under 3 to 5 seconds, I guess. But he just like runs through it.
Yeah. We were there for 5 hours. Yeah, anyway, but I bought this shirt and it is easily the greatest shirt I own. Because I don't know if you can see, there's a sopapilla on a swing here.
What's a sopapilla?
Have you never had a sopapilla? Oh, yeah, it's the greatest. It's fried dough with honey. It's so good.
I mean, I maybe have. I just didn't know that's what it was called.
Oh, they're so good. There's a sopapilla on a swing, which was part of the puppet show.
Okay.
It was the part of the puppet show where we all lost our entire minds and started going, oh, she's so fancy, and like acting kind of like there was some kind of angelic being descending upon the stage.
Margaritas were involved, ladies and gentlemen.
There were margaritas. There's a taco here, a taco man, and Black Bart, and the cliff diver, obviously, and then Man Bear Pig, who is in South Park.
Okay.
And so anyway, it's the greatest shirt. I am obsessed with it. So
we had, I think this is a, I mean, if there's margaritas, I'll spend 5 hours anywhere. Really?
There is, and they're good. They're strong.
I could go to the RNC if you gave me margaritas.
They're strong margaritas. The RNC. We would get kicked out of the RNC if you gave me margaritas.
Oh no, the turning point thing that was in Georgia, the University of Georgia.
Start heckling.
Did you see the, they were like heckling JD Vance in Athens.
I know.
You know it's going.
It's going bad.
Badly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I do think there's some. So, we had Showbiz Pizza, that has now become
Chuck E.
Cheese. Yeah. Yeah, and like, whilst it is a chain and not a historical landmark, I do think there is some of the nostalgia, because I saw a documentary on Showbiz Pizza, because they don't exist anymore, but the little characters and stuff, people have started collecting them.
Yeah.
Like the bear, and it's just different characters that would sing to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt some kind of way. So I feel like there has to be some nostalgia there too.
There's a little bit of nostalgia, I think, for sure. And you can tell, like, just walking, like, as soon as you see people, you can tell who grew up going and who is new. But I will also say that, like, just the experience is so weird. It's so weird because it's in a strip mall.
Yeah.
And you think it's going to not, but it's humongous. And I genuinely can't wrap my head around how there's this much space in this place because it's in a strip mall. And then it's just like, there's just so much. There's so much going on. We did jail pictures, you know, where you pretend like you're in jail. And they used to have you dress up, like, with the costumes and stuff. Yeah, which I have also done.
Dresses up.
Mm-hmm. I'll put up all these pictures. It's going to be a time.
She will.
But it was so much fun. We had.
Here is my usually, you know, I'm like, okay, cool. But the one thing I did get mad about, and this is genuine enthusiasm, is your video that you took of the divers. Really vital thing missing from that video, which is the bottom.
I couldn't see it. Because of where we were standing.
I would never tell you this because I'm an oldest child, but I was kind of pumped about seeing the divers. And then they just jump into like a tree. And then,
I'm very sorry about that. I couldn't see them. There was where we were standing. Cause I, even as I was recording it, I was like, oh,
it just
did not get the end of that dive.
It kind of is more impressive. Cause they could be diving into like 2 feet down.
Well, I remember too, after I took that video, I said, did you guys hear a splash? Cause I didn't hear the splash. So I was also a little worried, but he was okay. We saw him later.
I mean, they're jumping and diving.
Mm-hmm.
So the water must
do tricks.
Must be fairly deep.
I'm assuming, yes.
They
don't let you in, so I don't know for sure, but there's a little sign that says if you go into the water, you're trespassing. And
I love that they have to tell you not to go into the danky restaurant.
Well, water. Clean now.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm sure it is. But I'm going to go ahead and say this is where my enthusiasm is I'm not going to get in the water.
So what we'll do is, because you can get what's called premium seating, and you get sat next to the cliff divers. So that while you're eating dinner, you can watch the cliff divers. You can
watch them dive into the water.
Water. You'll see the whole thing.
I feel like you just get like black mold poisoning immediately. Upon entering. I just imagine it being
great. I think probably you used to. Yeah, I think that was very true for a while because they showed the pictures and I was like, oh my God, nothing in there is original at this stage, I think.
Yeah, good on them.
It looks the same. They did a great job.
Yeah, really, I mean, I think that was important. Like, you have to keep it looking.
Well, this was our big concern. When it went bankrupt, we were very worried about who was going to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, they're going to ruin it. Cause if it's like,
well, no better people could have bought it than,
I know, it was the perfect people to buy it. Cause they were so dedicated to like maintaining and like improving where like the food is much better. Right. And the situation, like, there's stuff that's been improved. That's important. Yeah. Also, there are little bars around now. So
that part intrigued me.
You can only be at your table for an hour because it's so busy. But then when you're walking around, there's like various bars. So you can just keep getting drinks as you're walking around.
Just rock up, right? Now you can?
Or do you have to have reservations, I think. It's very busy.
I believe you. I thought maybe we had.
It's not the wait list anymore, though.
That was the thing that like what I meant rock up was not like.
Oh, yeah. You can get reservations. Like, I can for sure get us reservations for November.
Okay. That's fine.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, you don't have to be on the email wait list anymore.
That was what I was talking about.
Yeah.
Before, listeners, you used to have to get on this, like, lottery situation.
It was a lottery situation. And it took people, like, over a year to get there. You would get an email from Casa Bonita, and it would say, okay, you're up, you get to make your reservation. You had like a limited time that you could make your reservation in, which is why a couple of years ago my friend got her email and I flew to Colorado solely to go to Casa Bonita because she was the first one of my friends who had gotten the email.
the only lottery I've ever been in like that was David Letterman. I got on.
Oh, that's cool. You've said this. Yeah.
I've said that before. Yeah. That was the only situation where like we were going anyway. We didn't have exact dates, but like we put our names in.
Yeah.
And you don't know. Yeah. You don't. The reason you remember is because you don't know who the special guest is going to be. And the special guest was Donald Trump.
No.
This was in like 2005.
Oh my God. Were you like,
I was like, and there was no musical guest. It was just him.
That's the lamest because even back then I would have been like, oh, this is lame. Like
that's 100% what we were like. We were like, oh, and then there was no musical guest, and we were like, oh, and then funny. David, the level, if there's any way, I'll try to find if there's any recording of that. His level of contempt for that man was ahead of its time.
That's fantastic.
So it feels like you're just watching two people who really hate each other.
Yeah. You're just like
trying to talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Because I feel like David Letterman didn't hide that well when he wasn't having a good time. That wasn't his strong point.
No, I don't think. I think he, he kind of, him and Jon Stewart are going to just immediately.
They're going to be like, nah.
This is terrible. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that you got to go.
Thank you.
Maybe one day they'll revive Showbiz Pizza and I can.
We'll have the same.
I mean, of course, not the same.
Not the same. Not, but
a similar. I will. Those of you, if you are from Atlanta, I'll take Christy to the Claremont Lounge, which is the R-rated version of Casa Bonita. The drinks are
fried. Cliff diving.
The drinks are cheaper, I bet, at the Claremont Lounge.
They're not. I was surprised that the drinks were the kind of typical for a fancy bar, you know, like not.
I went and looked. Expensive. I went and looked after you showed us the food because the food didn't look the most amazing, but I wanted to look.
It's pretty good. Yeah.
Look, taste and looks are not always the same.
I mean, I got Christmas enchiladas, so it's not a pretty plate.
It's true. Mexican is not always, or at least American Mexican is not always known for that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I saw I just immediately just scrolled and I was just like, oh, they got queso. Cool. I'm good. Oh, they got margaritas. I'm good. Cause I could just sit there and eat queso and margaritas until I died.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. There used to be restrictions. So in the before times, if you weren't going to eat, you had to pay an entrance fee.
Mm-hmm.
The entrance fee was more than the food. And so we would just get taco salads and like kind of eat them and then fill up on sopapillas because the sopapillas used to be unlimited. They're not unlimited anymore, which is very upsetting. But the food is edible, which I guess kind of balanced that
stuff. Well, and I said in the text message, I was like, you don't go to Disney World for like the food. That's
At least you're not going to get food poisoning anymore, which is great because that used to be a real concern.
Oh no!
And the before times were bad.
That black mold.
We would eat before we went. We would eat at like Taco Bell, and then we would go. We would get the taco salad, pick around, and then just eat a bunch of sopapillas. Was what we would do.
How many of the sopapillas can you get now?
So you can get more. You just have to pay for them. You get two each for free with your meal. But if you want more, you have to pay for more. Whereas the sopapillas used to be free and unlimited, and you just raise your flag. However, the margaritas were very strong and $13. And I was like, I'm okay paying $13 for a very strong margarita. Like, it's not
if it's good.
Yeah. Like it's not like,
and you're not going to drink it in like 2 seconds. That would be annoying.
No, it was big.
There you go.
Yeah.
And that makes a difference too.
Yeah. was a good, big, strong margarita. Every time Jen took a sip, she went, ooh!
Based on your reaction to the puppet.
Of we were the, having a good time.
Dessert puppet.
The Sopapilla. I mean, she descended on a swing and then there were bubbles and it was...
This feels like an experience that would be made better with a margarita as well.
Oh my goodness. Well, listeners, if you have the chance to go to Cascanita, I highly recommend it. It is fantastic. And just make sure you have time to spend there. This is not an hour venture. You want to be there for many hours. Maybe not five, but many. And
If you have me at 5 hours, Christy, you've drank with me for 5 hours before. I'm going to not be conscious. Like, you can't. That's a lot of.
It went really. I mean, when we looked at the time and we were like, oh, it was more like, okay, is there anything else anybody wants to do? And we were kind of like, well, and then we looked at the time and we were like, oh, nope, we should just go because it's been 5 hours and we didn't realize how quickly that went. So
there you go. Christy works PR now for not only the state of Colorado, not only the city of Denver,
just Casa Bonita. If they would hire me, I would do it.
And oh god, I forgot the name of the band.
The format.
I almost said the project.
The project.
Because in my head, I could see, like, I was trying to recall the sign, and in my head, it said project. Jeez, how much gin did you put in here?
Really good. He made it strong. That was also great. We also went to the Format concert. I had a very busy weekend last weekend. Format concert, Casa Bonita. I also have a Format t-shirt, but... needs to get washed first.
It's a secondary.
I mean, I love the format so much, but this shirt is magical. It has a swinging sopapilla.
Well, guys, you know where she draws the line.
So. You all know how to win me over now. It's just a really good sopapilla. Are you excited to go to the Format concert in September?
I am. Yep, I am. Except for when you talked about having to stand at the front for like a million hours, and I was like, oh, well, that's been a while since these old knees have.
I know, it was painful.
Have done that, like
it was. There was a lot of groaning that happened the next morning.
Whenever I think I saw, who did I see where I was doing? Like I wanted to see them. So this should tell you something, but I was like doing these like leg exercises where I was going up and down.
Yeah.
I felt like I just stood in one place.
We were doing some stretching between the show, like the acts. We were like, oh God. Yeah. It's funny because like most of the audience was older. And so we were all in the same boat of everybody just kind of like, ah.
Also, I typically don't go to venues these days that require that like push to the front situation. It's usually like.
Well, the Janus has no seating because it's just it's an outdoor courtyard.
Okay. But you can sit down. Yeah.
On the ground. I wouldn't recommend it only because everybody is standing. Like around.
Well, I mean, just for like a second.
Oh, but yeah, you could on like.
What if I just sat on the ground beside you and was like, just had my hand up in the air?
You're just like, yeah.
Yeah.
It would be pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
We'll
talk later about that. So guys, today in theology world, I mean, we could keep talking.
We could do a whole episode just on. No,
it would be a one-woman show. I've made all the contributions I have, which was I was don't tell Christy weirdly interested in those divers, except that I couldn't see where they were landing or if they landed at all.
They did.
They're also
the margaritas sound majestic. Mm-hmm. I want some cheese dip. The food look okay, but we can work with this. And that's about all I got.
Okay, so but in theology world. So Leah and I both and Stuart. This includes Stuart, guys.
It does.
Are writing articles for the forthcoming Encyclopedia of Religion and Pop Culture, which is really exciting. I was emailed about it by the editor, mm-hmm. and you and I have both met with him. He's lovely. So, really nice guy.
He is.
He's in Missouri. And so you and Stuart co-wrote your article on Star Wars, and it's so good.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Go ahead.
I had no idea what to expect, given that you co-wrote it, firstly, and also, like, you know, it's a, so our articles are both what they would call medium length ones. So they're between 2,000 and 5,000 words. And so kind of like a journal article, short journal article kind of situation. But yeah, I was like, I don't know what this is going to look like. And it was so interesting. And it was really seemed like the way that it's written, I know, and I can tell that you both contributed fully, but the writing is so seamless. I was really impressed. So,
well, thank you. I hate doing group projects.
Excellent work though.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate it. Like it part of the group project thing is not only that I'm very anxious and type A and controlling. So I'm an academic, basically.
Yeah.
But it's also that, pretty much all of that, actually. I never think that it seems, I say this to my students that I teach now, it never seems like the project is cohesive. Like it always seems like you did this bit and then you did this bit. And
you can always tell, like, oh, that person tried harder, or
yes,
you know, what have you. Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah,
you can't tell though.
Well, thank you. And so, yeah, the chapter was, I originally had talked to Christy about doing horror films, I believe, or something related to that. But by the time I emailed this person, this editor, that was gone. And the things that were left were like things I sure didn't know about.
Yeah.
Then there was Star Wars. And I was like, oh, nobody wants to touch this. Like, I understand. And so then I thought, well, I've never written anything with Stuart. And Stuart is, I mean, if you could get an honorary PhD in something, he could get it in Star Wars. Like, he knows, he can recall stuff just, it's wild.
Yeah.
Like, he just got it in his head. and so that kind of, the fact that it was one of the options, despite it being super popular, was kind of the framework that we started working on. This chapter, I say chapter because I thought it was a chapter to start with, but it's an encyclopedia entry, which works kind of. I mean, we do have an angle, but like there is a lot of like back information if you want to go look at it. But it was also my work with systematic ecology, where a lot of the people on that show really, really have strong opinions about the new sequels.
Yeah.
For Star Wars. So we looked at, for reference, there's the three ones that began in 1977.
Yeah.
So they oftentimes call them the OG. I think I refer to them as like the Lucas. Well, I say the Lucas Six because he wrote those. And then he wrote
the other three
prequels. Yeah. So, and then he didn't have much, if anything, to do with the sequels. So that's,
oh, okay. I didn't know that.
9 in total. Yeah. Cause at that stage he'd sold Lucasfilms to Disney.
Ah.
I see.
Okay.
And that's when J.J. Abrams takes over and you start to see him doing.
Okay.
Interesting. Yeah. So
of this, yeah.
Part of the the article is talking about this idea of
there's I a did couple read the article. I just there are some bits that I was like, I don't know what that's about.
The Star Wars universe is vast and it's only getting more vast. But I think the thing to note is we basically just talked about the 9 films, the OG 3, the prequels, and then the sequels. So those are kind of the Skywalker line basically of narrative. Mm-hmm. So we called it We Are What Grows Beyond Religious Fundamentalism and the Fight for the Spirit of Star Wars. And so, you know, we talked about why is it that people have such particular opinions about the show? Now, all shows, all series have opinions. Like, you can't.
Yes.
I just watched the new episode of Euphoria and I was like, oh, can't wait to see what people are saying about that.
Yeah.
There's a lot. But for some reason, Star Wars seems to hit something different. And so we talked a little bit about George Lucas and his understanding of religion and how it influenced. And there's a couple of interviews. He did one when he started the prequels, or he had finished the prequels rather, but he was starting to film them. And where he sits with Bill Moyers and he talks about the religion aspects. And he talks a lot about Joseph Campbell, who, if you know about Joseph Campbell, wrote, Hero with a Thousand Faces, but also very famously talked about the hero's journey. And this sort of like idea that all the quote great myths and great religious stories have this kind of pattern they follow. Yeah. And so he really wanted to find that through line of the pattern and then question what that meant for humanity, why these stories intrigued us so. And Lucas admits that that's something that deeply influenced him. And also he grew up Methodist. So there was that. And it really starts to kind of sound at the end of the day, like this kind of like hodgepodge of religious influences. So as we were going through this, it kind of seemed like he was just grabbing at, you know, he starts talking about Japanese samurais influencing certain things, which you can clearly see in the films.
Oh, for sure.
And their aesthetic. And it's like, wow, this really is just kind of, and he says that he says,
yeah,
we're basically sponges and that everything that we have consumed, we can then, you know, put out into the world that it influences us, what we consume. But the sort of angle, I guess, we take with it is we go through and we look at the prequels and the sequels and how much money they made and the original. And that's where you start to really see the rubber hit the road. Because the original 3 make so much money, something like $3 billion or something.
Yeah.
The sequels and the prequels make a good amount of money, like more than most films would. Because it's Star Wars.
Yeah.
But what we see is that nothing can kind of hit close to that, except for the first of the sequels called The Force Awakens, which a lot of critics don't love because it's basically a carbon copy of the original movie in 1977. Yeah. And but fans love it.
Okay. Well.
And it does the best in that world.
Okay.
So our argument was that basically the original 3 have become the sacred text of Star Wars and that it's become kind of a fundamentalist thing, which is that if you stray too far from those OG 3, then people are going to reject it.
Yeah.
And that even when George Lucas himself, who wrote the OG 3, writes the prequels, people get really upset about it.
Yeah.
A lot of aspects of it. They don't love it. It's not widely praised. And so,
Jar Jar Binks was maybe a bad choice. That's the most Star Wars knowledge I have.
Sand is scratchy. You got Hayden Christensen acting alongside Natalie Portman so bless his heart. That should never happen. But what Lucas says is that he wanted to expand the universe. He didn't want it to die. So he felt like in order to do that, you had to make more of the there's more of the story to tell. David Lynch talks about this too, Twin Peaks, which is this idea like there's more.
Yes.
There's more to this story, yeah. You know? And so what we say is that it seems like with religious fundamentalists, but also I would say Star Wars fundamentalists, is they either want to follow that and they're fundamentalists, the OG three, and they are not going to stray from that. And if you go too far X, Y, and Z away from that, that's them done.
Yeah.
Hence why they didn't like the prequels. Or you're of the Lucas group who want to expand the universe, mm-hmm. whether that's religious or otherwise. And then you also have the people, there's this quote by Adam Driver playing Kylo Ren, where it seems very purposeful in the films because it's a part of the new sequels of which George Lucas is not a part of. And it's called The Last Jedi. It also doesn't mirror the OG three at all. And Kylo Ren, who's like this anti-hero villain, maybe, blah, blah, blah.
Adam Driver.
Adam Driver, yeah. He looks at Daisy Ridley, who plays Rey,
okay.
who's the hero, and says, what if we just burn it down? Let's just burn it down and start over.
Mm-hmm.
And you have another famous scene with Yoda and Luke Skywalker where basically Luke is threatening to burn down all of these sacred texts of the Jedi, these written down things, and Yoda beats him to it. He gets a lightning bolt and just like the ghost Yoda and sets this tree on fire and says, this is not what the Jedi are. The Jedi are not books. Like, they're not things that sit on a shelf. They're not stuff that you maybe deem as sacred. And they watch it burn.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
This is what I think stuck out to me the most also was this idea of religious fundamentalism. And like, I don't know a ton about Star Wars, so, but I know a lot about religious fundamentalism and in a lot of areas. And I think one of the things that I thought was really interesting with this was the way that you identified maybe the root cause of fundamentalism. Mm-hmm. Instead of what I think happens a lot, especially in kind of the colloquial ways that we talk about fundamentalism, is that it gets tied to either Christian fundamentalism or sometimes Muslim fundamentalism. And like, that's the only way that we see it, you know, mm-hmm. is that these two branches or these two ways of being the two largest religions, and the idea that it kind of taints the whole of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what I thought was so interesting with your discussion of it is that it's this kind of rejection that there's more going on with the whole mm-hmm. than the fundamentalists. They want it to be simple. They want it to be just, you know, a couple of precise rules or stories, and like, don't give them anything else. And when you try to expand and you say, but there's nuance and there's evolution, or there's, you know, updated discussions about this or that, that's what's being rejected. And I think that like that kind of explanation of fundamentalism in a whole is a good way of approaching the concept generally. So like, you're not even just talking about Star Wars. It's like, you can apply this
to all
sorts of things. Like, you know, we had Nick on to talk about Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. I think that that fandom can get the same way. And I think that that's probably also kind of a underlying cause there. Or like, if we're talking about religious fundamentalism, it's this notion that religion can be something simple, and like that you can give it 5 to 10 bullet points and that's all you have to know, and you don't need to worry about nuance or like, how does this play out in cultures that are different from ours, or just for people who are different from us, you know, and like all of that kind of stuff gets thrown out because it's complicated.
Yeah. And George Marsden wrote a book called Fundamentalism in American Culture. And he's talking about religious fundamentalism, but he's also talking about other bits too. Like, how we can become this way with other media and other things that we hold to be, not even media, but other things we hold to be important. And he discusses this idea that essentially a lot of the religious fundamentalists have held on to not the Bible, but these early translations of the Bible and very specific understandings, like of the Bible as being infallible, like that kind of thing, that are early developments, but that are, and maybe even later, but they have these pillars that they just won't let go of, and you can't convince them otherwise. Mm-hmm. And there's some sort of, I think I word it that it's not about rigidity, but it's about certainty. And
yes, exactly.
It, I mean, you could argue that it is also rigidity, but it's also this idea that what is it benefiting the people who hold fast to fundamentalism? And to me, when I read them, I think it's certainty, you know, because reading other things that rock that boat make you feel unsteady and uncertain. And, you know, you start to question things. And I think for the Star Wars folk, that those OG3 movies just meant so much. So part of the thesis that I started with, that it was that it had something to do with George Lucas. Like, I thought if it had to be touched by him for it to be considered canon, basically. Yeah.
But which would make sense to me, but apparently not.
Those prequels really set people off. They didn't like it. And you know, he has been really hesitant to talk about the sequels after they came out. I think he said something about Last Jedi, which is the second of the sequels, looking nice. I think he said it was filmed nice. You know, it's like saying she has a good personality.
Yeah.
Good personality.
Yeah.
But I think part of that is not necessarily because he can influence that universe, although I certainly think he can, but I think it's because he knows that no matter what he says, it doesn't matter at this stage, because people just want that story. So that story meant, that OG3 story meant something to people. And, you know, it's the connection that we have, and, you know, people, it's Star Wars. So the irony of this is that people disagree because it's Star Wars.
Yep.
But you know, it's, if you look at the numbers, you know,
it's, I just think it's so interesting because I think about it in light of like Buffy the Vampire Slayer almost got a reboot, right? Like they were filming, they had Sarah Michelle Gellar on board, they had the lead actress cast, the woman who directed Hamnet was on board to direct. It was going to be like, it was going, and then it got canceled. And I've had a conversation with a few people about like, how do we feel about it being canceled? And a lot of what many of us were was like, you know, we wanted to see something, but we were also very nervous it would ruin things. Mm. Like, it's not going to play out the way I want it to, you know, like it's not going to be exactly what I expected or what have you. And it does bring up that idea of like, who is controlling the art? And also like, what are the reasons that we're so tied to this thing? You know, what about it? Like, why was I so concerned that Casa Bonita be correctly renovated? You know, because like, what are these things that we're so tied to? And I think when it's something silly, like Casa Bonita, like whatever, but when it's something like that's developing your understanding of the world, whether that's through Star Wars or religion, it becomes like, if you're wrong about something, your whole world is destroyed. And if they put out a new Star Wars that essentially proves that you're wrong, you know, that does. But at the same time, this is what I think is important to keep in mind, is that we're probably wrong about a lot of things in the world, you know? And like, if your whole world view or your belief about God or whatever is tied to you being right, then that's also not really like that. Then who is the god in that scenario. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think you see people saying in the prequels, even if you don't, you like that George Lucas is at the helm, people said it, you know, it looked different. Well, it's 20-something years.
Probably looked better.
Yeah, I mean, and minus Jar Jar Binks, but
minus Jar Jar Binks.
But people were like, it doesn't feel like the same thing. And, you know, Lucas in that interview, I appreciated, he said, you know, I have more I want to explain about this that I never got to. And, you know, it's still this, you know, we're still telling a story here. Like, it's a part of it, but, you know, people blamed a lot of it on aesthetics and characters like Jar Jar Binks, but there was also certain ideas, like, there were, it's like mitochondrias or something. I know it's not the right word to all my Star Wars fans, but it was basically this idea that Jediism could be measured in your blood, or sorry, force sensitivity could be measured in your blood. So you could measure this, and people, when Stuart and I were reading about this, people got really upset about that. Now, this is George Lucas who's created this.
Yeah.
And to your point, it doesn't necessarily contradict anything, although I'm sure there are some things that it could do, but this is the man who wrote the original.
Yeah. So, like, he should be allowed to.
He can do that. He can. And to him, it didn't contradict. Yeah. It was an addition, you know. Yeah. It didn't take away from all of these Jedi or these force sensitive people. It just said, here's a means by which you could measure it. But because it became like a almost a medical thing, people didn't love that. And it's so, yeah, it does become a question of, you know, and we all fall victim to this. I haven't watched the reboot of Twin Peaks. Because I watched the first episode, and guess what? It looked different because mm-hmm. it was a million years later.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if the characters were behaving the way I thought they would. And
like the reboot of Scrubs. Have mm-hmm. you seen any of it? Mm-hmm. It's interesting because it's the same people. They have all the same actors, and Zach Braff is at the helm again. Mm-hmm. I've only seen a few episodes. I haven't been watching religiously, but I don't dislike them. They're not exactly like the old Scrubs. I have no beef with them. But I also feel like there's a certain level of nervousness in watching, like every time I'm like, are they about to ruin something, you mm-hmm. know? But it's that kind of, again, there's a thing about our own desire for control over the understanding or whatever that comes out. And I think too, it's interesting to, when you look like historically, fundamentalism doesn't just come out of nowhere. It's always coming out of, because there's a movement, there's a progressive movement that happens, and then there's fundamentalism as a response. Mm-hmm. And so it's never just like the theology that gets developed on its own. It's, oh no, you've done something we don't like, so now we're going to backtrack and we're going to get tighter and stricter and more intense, you know?
Yeah.
And I think
you see that with, you know, you for forever, you had those OG three movies.
Yeah.
And, you know, people, I think, desired to experience that again.
Yeah.
Like what they experienced back then. And then it happened. And
then it wasn't exactly.
Yeah. And so when I hear people talking about the Scrubs reboot, it's a mixed bag, you know, and I think a lot of people are, you know, the spirit I think is still there, but
yeah,
the people don't look the same. Well, yeah, no crap. They don't. Yeah. Neither do we.
Neither do we. I know. Right. Same.
Cause there's stuff that's happened there. Mm-hmm. I saw, this was kind of a funny interview that I saw where Mark Hamill, who famously plays Luke Skywalker in the sequels, he says, you know, they just kill us off. And he's talking about a spoiler alert, I guess. But I mean, yeah, they essentially the sequels have a Skype either Leia is kind of the head of one, Carrie Fisher, you get Han Solo, Harrison Ford, and then you get Luke Skywalker, Mark Hamill, who have kind of their own one of the three of the sequels. Okay. That's kind of their story, like their conclusion, I would offer.
Oh, okay.
Now, the issue, which Mark Hamill, I didn't hear bring up in this interview, is that Carrie Fisher sadly passed away.
Right.
Yeah. During the filming of this.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So they had to reuse old cuts of her that they had already filmed for her particular film.
Mm.
So, and I think Harrison Ford, you don't have to quote me on this, but I think he had said, like, you know, this is probably my last go round or whatever. And Mark Hamill seems kind of upset about it, but I want to be like my brother in Christ.
They can't be.
How long can you go?
Yeah. I mean, that would be.
Harrison Ford's got to be close to 80 at this stage. He can't just put on.
Yeah. Well, and Harrison Ford just kind of famously does not want to keep doing Han Solo. Like, he's like, no, leave me.
He's like, get my ass on a bridge because that's where everybody falls off.
He's like, please, please no. Though, but if you the haven't.
Carrie Fisher thing, I felt like when he said that, he's had this quote of like, they keep like killing us off in the new films or something, talking about the new films. And I'm like, one of your three died.
He's 83. Harrison Ford is 83. He is still acting, may I say, because he's in Shrinking right now.
He can,
but like, act, he but is not gonna be Han Solo. Han Solo, is that correct?
Han Solo.
Okay, thank you. I had.
I mean, like, he can't, or Indiana Jones. He can't be just like running around like fighting aliens. Apparently,
the first one. Yeah.
like he doesn't, and this is no shade to Harrison Ford. I think Harrison Ford just knew.
Yeah, he's like, I don't want to do that anymore. And that's, I think, good for him. Mm-hmm. I do think, you know, it is important to be able to say, like, okay, me appearing in this wouldn't work anymore. Like, again, the Buffy reboot, part of the issue, the thing that made me so nervous, Sarah Michelle Gellar was going to still be in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
She was still part of it. But very obviously, David Boreanaz and James...
Marsters
couldn't, because they're significantly older and they're vampires, so they can't have aged, right? There's no real getting around that. And I was like, I don't know how to watch a Buffy where there's still Buffy but there's no Angel and Spike, you know? Like,
yeah,
that freaked me out. And now I was still gonna watch it.
Like I said, I started watching the Twin Peaks, and spoiler alert, it opens with Kyle MacLachlan, who's not 80 something, but he's probably,
he's older than
he's older
yeah
than he used to be in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Like, when Twin Peaks was out, you know, so like, and I remember watching in there, I think one of the opening scenes, he's like on a motorcycle or something, and I just was like,
well, and this is kind of what we were talking about with Scrubs, my friend and I, is that it's not that it's bad. And again, I don't dislike it. It's that as like where they are in their careers, mm-hmm. and as adults, I need them to have grown up more, because it doesn't track for me anymore to have the same neuroses that they had in the original Scrubs. Like, there needs to be a bit more movement forward. But like at that point, then what is Scrubs doing? Because the whole shtick is that JD is neurotic and,
but even what you just
said, and you know, all that
you just said is very kind of fundamentalist in a way, not in a bad way, but it is.
Yeah, it's like
there are things that have to happen
yeah.
for this to be Scrubs. And if they don't or they can't. By the way, Kyle MacLachlan is 67. I just looked that up. So he's not going to be running around hacking people up or whatever. But yeah, so I mean, I think we all do this. And I think that's important to note, is that we all have
these ways. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I love Sarah Michelle Gellar. I pretty much think she's like a robot at this stage because she's still so pretty and seems to not age. But like, you know, to bring in a new person to like maybe kick vampire.
Well, it can't just keep being centralized around her too, you know. Plus, I don't know. Anyway, I mean, I have a lot of Buffy thoughts, but like, I think you're quite right. It's, we have to be able to let go of some of the things. We have to recognize, one, that we're all capable of being fundamentalists,
mm-hmm.
because then we can understand it better. But we also have to like learn how to let go of some of these things that we feel fundamentalist about. And I think that's a good kind of thing to keep in our heads about all sorts of things in our lives. Like,
well, this leads to a fantastic, don't you love a good bow?
I love it.
All right. Well, here's the bow. In The Last Jedi, which is the second, where Yoda is burning down the Jedi manuscripts, which Luke had threatened to burn down. And basically, he takes this opportunity to give Luke a lesson in typical Yoda fashion, of course. He says, it actually isn't the sacred texts that contain the answers of the Force. It's how we pass it down to the future generations, who will then take it and run with it. This is the burden of holding knowledge, but it's also the nature of the swift passage of time. And so Yoda says, Skywalker, still looking to the horizon instead of the meat in front of your nose. Heed my words not, did you? Pass on what you have learned, strength, mastery, but weakness, folly, failure also. Yes, failure most of all, the greatest teacher. Failure is. Luke, we are what they grow beyond. That is the truth, the true burden of all masters.
Mm. That is good. That's a good bow. I like that.
So, you know, and then they just sit there and watch all these books burn.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah.
But people didn't like that one. And I think it's very clear in many ways why.
Yeah.
There's a lot of chat. Yeah. It was a new director. It was a new writer. And there was a lot of chat of just burning it down and starting over.
Yeah. Like, this isn't what we wanted. Yeah. Well, like I said, I was really impressed. I thought it hit so many important things to think about that wasn't just, here is how Star Wars and religion combine. Like, you guys did a great job.
Thank you.
Coming to it with a fresh way of talking about it, you know.
There's quite a lot of books about this, but
oh, for sure.
Like, you know, Lucas himself has said, I mean, if you talk about Joseph Campbell, you're kind of already at a moot point about religion, because he's saying, I'm using these frameworks already.
Yeah.
You can stick, I think there's a quote in there too, that when Star Wars, the original, came out, you had almost every religious tradition across the globe that was claiming that it was about them. Mm-hmm. And in theory, it could be, because that's the nature of Campbell's work. Let's see what we're fundamentalist about. And I am not a fundamentalist about gin and tonic, but it did give me problem with saying the word fundamentalist. So
it's fantastic. I love it. Well, thank you. I'm really excited. We will keep you all posted about the encyclopedia, because I'm super excited about it. I think it's very interesting. Now, it is obviously going to be like wildly expensive, because it's an encyclopedia. So this is not something for purchase, but we will let you guys know how it's available, mm-hmm. what platforms it's on, how you can access things, etc. Please do not. And if you just want our articles, we can send them to you, but please do not even for a moment consider They're like $400 encyclopedias. It's wild.
Publishers love Christie right now.
It's a thing you get in the library.
She also is burning it all down.
I have heard. Well, no, because I've been looking at encyclopedias. Just, I've been trying to just get like a, sorry, here's a cricket or something making noise. I feel like I'm losing my mind. Just to get a sense of like how to write my article. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, I have seen the price for, and they have all been multiple hundreds of dollars. But also, typically, these are things your library will have. Yes.
So I have learned, because my last publisher was Palgrave Macmillan, which is also a part of the Springer group.
Yep.
Is it typically, I learned this at AR, your institutions will get a license for these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have access to all of their stuff.
Yep.
So definitely check with your library first.
Yeah. Yeah. Do that, because that's who they're really trying to get these encyclopedias to.
Yep.
So they don't print a whole lot of them anymore, which is unfortunate. But anyway, so there's.
All right. May the force be with you.
And also with you.
That's correct. Bye, y'all.
Bye.